This is lesson number 19, and this is tonight we're going to be talking about the new anti-Semitism, which will divide into three different categories. Not three categories, but we'll divide into three sections: replacement theology, the liberal left, and radical Islam. And what you'll see is that basically three different groups of people that are instrumental, that are being used by the enemy to push the agenda of the new anti-Semitism, are some of the church, some of the evangelical church, and of course the liberal left and radical Islam. So an introduction here, in light of the last 2,000 years of Jewish history, and which is basically what we've been doing in this class, it is obvious that one overarching theme has been anti-Semitism. We have also noticed that there has been a progressive morphing of the anti-Jewish sentiment, from theological, religious, at the closing of the biblical canon, all the way to racial during the Holocaust. We've looked at that. We saw it was first, you know, theological anti-Judaism, and it became all the way to Holocaust, racial hatred, a people group that was subhuman, that needed to be destroyed. It certainly did not start that way at the close of the canon. But it was a progressive morphing of anti-Semitism, which is still going on today. Again, it has morphed again, which is what we're going to talk about in the new anti-Semitism. So a new form of anti-Semitism has emerged from a further morphing of this longest hatred against the Jews, and that is the new anti-Semitism. I would venture to say that everything we've looked at up to now could be categorized under the old anti-Semitism or classical anti-Semitism, to coin a word. We could say that now, in the last 50 years, just about, there's a new kind of anti-Semitism that really has been really made popular, for lack of a better word, in the last two decades. The key word is new here, okay? It's not so much that the object of anti-Semitism has changed, but mainly the way it is carried out. So the new anti-Semitism has a lot in common with what I called, for the whole class, I called the old anti-Semitism. As far as the goal is concerned, it was, it is, and always will be the complete destruction of the Jewish people just because they're Jewish. Now, again, it didn't start that way. Destruction of the Jewish people was not the original goal, okay? When anti-Semitism started to show its ugly face, it was just theological difference of opinion, but it became at the during the Holocaust, during Second World War, which was, you know, the goal was to destroy the Jewish people. And today, after 65 years, it is reborn, or almost 70 years actually, in spite of the Jewish people's creed of never again, which is still to this day something that Jewish people, the never again is what came out of the ashes of the Holocaust. But it is as if Satan kept a few coals slowly burning under a pile of consumed ashes, waiting for the opportune time to reignite the age-old hatred. And it's possibly, I don't want to be dogmatic about this, but it's possibly the beginning of Satan's final attack on Israel, what's happening right now with anti-Semitism in the world. And as such, it is delivered to the world in a new package, making it more believable, easier to accept than its racially motivated predecessor. And I've told you that many times already. It has new boundaries, it has a new source, and a new methodology. And again, in all of the different classes that we took together, the different time that we got together, I showed you some segments of the news, some photos, some articles that showed you a little bit of what, not just anti-Semitism through the ages, but what we have today in our day and age in America and all around the globe. And those are all examples of the new anti-Semitism. So this is not going to be foreign to you. We're just going to go through this. It's going to be like a little bit of a refresher course on the new anti-Semitism. So even though anti-Semitism can be traced through the Bible and subsequent church history, the most nefarious memory in the Jewish psyche is that of Nazi Germany's systematic attempt at destroying all of European Jewry. As a measure of the lasting impact of this historical event, it is not uncommon today to speak of the Jewish people using pre-Holocaust and post-Holocaust history markers. It is very common in Jewish people, when they look at the Jewish history, and with Jewish people, when they look at Jewish history, to think of
us or our people before the Holocaust and our people after the Holocaust. And like you think of, you know, of Christianity, or you know, you think of before the cross, after the cross, and you look at history, you can divide history that way. You can divide history between world wars, or in the Jewish people, the main event, tragic event that actually puts a marker of pre and post is the Holocaust. So the boundaries of the old anti-Semitism were European for the most part. We talked about that with the train system, if you remember, the European train system. Even though history could testify that already back then, the hatred against Jewish people had transcended borders and continents, the big push came out of Germany and extended to various East and Western European countries. To be sure, the list of people group that became co-perpetrators alongside Nazi Germany does not represent all countries in the same light. In all fairness, it must be known that European involvement in a final solution went from very willing to reluctant. Actually, that's something I've already I've picked this one up from for another lesson, I believe. I reread this, and this is familiar to me here. Unfortunately, the propaganda and violence used by Hitler and his men resulted in the destruction of 6 million Jews. So, I realize that I've given you this already. This is a part that I've already given you. Shame on me. It's okay. I'm rereading it. But what I really want to talk about is, actually, let me see if I need to even repeat that. See, I knew I was going to, let's see, page 2. I've given you this in a previous lesson. Yes, I've given you this already. We're gonna pick up at page 4. I don't want to repeat this because you already know all this. You're all my best students, and you know all the details about this. I want to talk about the sources and the boundaries and the people. The new sources, okay? And again, this will be a refresher as well because I've already shared that with you guys. Before exposing the sources of the new anti-Semitism, and we're on page 4 now. Before exposing the sources of the new anti-Semitism and how different it is from its predecessor, we must realize that the core source for anti-Semitism has not changed and never will. It is Satan himself who hates what God loves and loves what God hates. That's the bottom line, okay? I don't care what people tell you about anti-Semitism. It's because of this and because of that. The core, the source, the original reason why we have anti-Semitism is because of Satan. It is a spiritual battle, okay? It is not geographical, geopolitical, political, cultural, economic. It is a spiritual battle, yes. Right, exactly. Satan's got to come up with a new plan because it's not really cool to be against people, to be a racist. That just doesn't fly anymore, okay? With all the genocides that people are really upset about, rightfully so, you know, around the world, it's not really cool to be a racist. But we have to continue the anti-Semitic agenda. So how can we change it? Well, this is what happened in the new anti-Semitism. In the name of peace, in the name of, you know, we are now becoming not anti-Semitic, but anti-Zionist or anti-Israel. You've heard this all throughout the class when we looked at the news. So, but even Satan must realize that, that's what we just said, you know, new times call for new methods. So he is now subcontracting his job of loathing Israel and the Jewish people to different groups within our ever-shrinking global community. Realize that, I mean, if Hitler had the internet and Skype and all those things, things would have gone a lot faster and a lot worse. Think about, you know, technology and you know how we communicate. Okay, you know, that's why when we know that when Yeshua returns, the whole world will know. Well, it's really not an impossibility. Back, you know, when I was a kid, you'd read this and you'd go like, how's that gonna happen? How is that possible? But today, you know, Yeshua could return on Skype, and everybody would know on Facebook. I'm tongue in cheek, but what I'm saying is, with the internet, with the technology the way we have it, everybody will know when Messiah returns, except for Trudy, of course, because she doesn't use a computer. See, there is a reason why you should be on a computer. Shakur, okay, good. You don't want to miss that. You don't want to miss that. Okay. Okay. So the first, the three sources of the new anti-Semitism are the replacement theology, the liberal left, and radical Islam, and they're somewhat in order of importance. But a reality here is replacement theology is the next two pages and. I've spoken on this so much, I'm not even going to read you. I'm going to spare you reading you the notes. I'll just tell you about it. But the replacement theology. Now, where does replacement theology come from? You all know now that it comes from the misinterpretation of the Bible in the first few centuries after the closing of the canon, when the church fathers got together with the rabbis and they studied Hebrew and they studied the scriptures and they got some allegorical interpretation from some of the rabbis, not all of them, but for some of them, and then they carried that to the church and then started teaching in the same methods, and pretty soon they have an allegorical approach to the Bible, and now you have a people that is not important to God anymore, the people, and they are being replaced by the church. And then this progressively got worse. That was the nature of our class, okay? The history of the Jewish people progressively got worse to the place where now we have today 63% of all Christians believe that God is done with Israel and the Jewish people. That's two-thirds. God is done with Israel and the Jewish people. That's two-thirds. This is huge. It's a large number, okay? And now, the question I ask you and I ask myself is replacement theology a result of anti-Semitism, or is anti-Semitism a result of replacement theology? And the answer is yes. The answer is yes. It's both. It's a little bit of both. Never to forget that in the equation we have to add human nature. Okay? We have said before, and I'll say it again because it's important to understand so that we don't get too cocky in our attitudes. We all have in us the ability. It's almost like it's a gift, but we'll just call it the ability because a gift would make it not right. The ability to hate our brother and our sister. It takes work to love. It's a natural thing for all of us to hate. I'm talking about human nature. I'm not talking about the Word of God. No, I'm talking about human nature in general. Believers, unbelievers, human nature, we have it in us. There are also a lot of people that are teaching replacement theology that truly tell you they have nothing against the Jewish people. They just think like, oh, I have personal friends that are amillennials and replacement pastor friends. A local pastor from where I used to live in the Northwest, who now pastors a large church here in Orange County, and he is a millennial. He doesn't believe that God has a plan for future Israel, but he doesn't hate the Jews. I've done Passover Seders at this church. He loves the Jewish people. He loves Israel. He doesn't think that God has the part of God's plan with mankind involves Israel, and there's going to be a return of Israel to the land, and that he thinks that God is done with all that. But he doesn't hate the Jews. I know he does. I know his heart. He came to festivals and holidays at my house in Seattle years ago. He would come and participate and learn about the Jewish holidays. He loved all that, but he didn't think that the Jewish people were going to ever be important again in God's plan. And in he believes what the Bible says. He just takes a different approach. He takes a different interpretation. He takes a more of an allegorical interpretation, especially on the parts that he wants to. And he's not the only one. We all do it. We all do it. To a certain extent, all of us have some places in the Bible that we look and we go like, most people say it means that,
Sorry?
I can justify my
behavior. Yeah, most people say it says that. I've read 15 commentaries. They all agree it says that. But I really think they're missing the point just by a little bit. You leave yourself a little back door so that you don't feel so guilty if you don't go along with what's being taught there. We've all done it. Maybe you're all better than me and you don't do it anymore, but we all have a little bit of an agenda when it comes to our own reading, not so much reading, but interpreting and applying the Bible to our own lives. So we can't be too quick to judge. Now, there are majors and minors, okay? But when it comes to replacement theology, what's happening here is it's being taught in seminaries. It's being taught by pastors coming out of seminaries. And then you get people going to church, and guess what? 95% of the people going to church don't even read their Bible. So what do they know? That's one problem. But it is a major problem. If you don't read your Bible and you're taught, and we're back to first century, like the Catholic Church. The popes and the priests would just come to the church and preach a sermon in Latin or not in Latin. But even if it was in their own tongue, people would be in the pews going like, wow, this man is learned. He knows everything. And he tells what we need to do and what we need to know. And since I don't know better and I trust him, he's my leader, I'm just going to go with it. So the result is that, you know, people don't go home like the Bereans, like it says in the Bible, check the word and make sure it's what it says. They don't do that. They don't want to take the time. They're intimidated. They read it and they don't understand. They're uneducated. It's a mix of everything. But most people don't read their Bible. The result is they buy what the pastor tells them or what the books that they read tell them, and they end up teaching replacement theology. And in replacement theology, basically it says that God is done with the Jews. And we know it's not true. But that's just one part of the problem how Satan is subcontracting his hatred is to different people group. The next one, we're on page 7 now. The next one is the liberal left and secular anti-Israelism. The liberal left poses a great threat. Great threat. I mean, what's happening right now with the Occupy Wall Street or Occupy My Hometown, leaving the blank because, they're in Irvine, they're everywhere. Occupy Wall Street is just kind of like the name for the whole, and I don't want to call it a movement because one of the problem really that this whole thing is coming from is a lack of leadership. It's more of an anarchy, grassroots protest. People, there's some truth in what people want to achieve. It's not all bad. I understand what they're trying to do, but it's very unorganized and there's no leadership. And it attracts, of course, a lot of French people and conspiracy theorists and weirdos. And were you raising your hand?
Yes. That's
a new one. That wouldn't surprise me, but that's a new one. I did not know that. No, I didn't know that they were actually paying people to do it. I know that there's a few politicians behind it, but it's still a very it's a strange thing happening right now, and especially with this slant on what's happening with anti-Semitism in the midst of it. So the liberal left, according to liberals, anti-Semitism is not even on the agenda. Don't talk about it. It's perfectly acceptable to be anti-Israel. They claim you can be anti-Israel or anti-Zionist in the name of world peace, all without being anti-Semitic, a claim that is foggy at best. I mean, it's not even foggy, it's just not true. You find out that anybody who tells you they're anti-Israel, at the end of the day, when they really clarify what they mean by that, they're anti-Semitic. Now, you can be, I have problems with some of some leaders of the Israeli government over the years that have made some moves that I didn't think were the wisest moves. Or there is, believe it or not, we're back to human nature, there is corruption in the Israeli government. When we say support Israel, I don't want you to think for a second that when I say support Israel,
I mean, support everything that Israel does and the Israeli government does. No, there's corruption in the Israeli government. They're having affairs, they're having money exchange, you know, all kind of, they're just like everybody else. They're fallen nature, fallen people, sinners, okay? But from what we know about the Bible, about the right to the land, about Jewish people in God's plan, we have a duty, a biblical mandate to support Israel from that perspective. It doesn't mean to support everything that Israel does. I've said that before too. So, during a recent trip to Europe in January of 2009, I observed a pro-Palestinian march in the heart of Paris, where people held a banner with the words "United Nation" in 1948. You give birth to an assassin, and you called her Israel. I was on the street when they were walking with those big banners. The crowd marched along, chanting the mantra "Israel." Assassin, Israel assassin, or displaying banners equating the Jewish Star of David with a Nazi swastika. I've showed you pictures of that. I'm not making it up. I was there when it happened in 09. Nobody in the crowd, the police or the local media, seemed to be concerned about the shift in the targeting. During that two-week period throughout France, several rabbis were attacked, a kosher meat factory was set ablaze, a car destroyed for displaying a Hebrew book inside the car, and many Jewish teenagers severely beaten on the streets. It has now become very clear that any move that Israel makes as a nation seems to render all Jewish people globally responsible and thus punishable as well. That is a big difference between the old anti-Semitism and the new anti-Semitism. While we didn't really have a modern state of Israel up to 1948, but now you can rest assured that every time anybody in Israel or Israel as a country makes a move politically, or you know, builds new settlements, or makes a political move of some sort, that's going to be reported on the news. Then the ripple effect of that move will be all over the planet against any Jew possible that can be hit. Not all of them all the time, but no Jewish person is safe anymore because of this new anti-Semitism. Something happens in Israel, all the Jews are responsible. It's as ludicrous as saying all Germans were Nazis, or all Arabs are Muslim terrorists. This is the same faulty thinking, faulty logic. Not all Nazis, not all Germans were Nazis, and not all Muslims are terrorists. Jews or not, and mind you, I'm applying that logic of Germans and Nazis and Muslims and terrorists, that would be assuming that some of the Jewish people are doing something bad, but not all are. But in our case, nothing bad is being done, so it's really not a parallel, you know, a fair comparison, if you follow my drift. That would be to say, you know, the bad thing that some Jewish people are doing doesn't mean that all that some people in Israel are doing doesn't mean that all Jews are bad. They're not even doing anything bad. They're doing, you know, they're defending themselves or doing things that are within their rights. The world is making it look bad. So that's that. The analogy is, we have to be careful with that analogy. Sorry? Who? Right. Sure. So now, where was I? Okay, so globally responsible. Painting with very broad strokes, liberals are associating all Jews with guilty Israel. We need to understand that is a double fallacy. Well, I just exactly told you that the next two paragraphs here is about the Muslims and the Nazis. So that's that for the liberal left. But you know what? Another thing here, why are we getting anti-Semitism out of this Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street? You know, some people are fighting in the press and going like, it's anti-Semitism. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. I just wrote an article on it today, and my take on it, you know, since you didn't ask me, I'll tell you. My take on it is that Occupy Wall Street is not an anti-Semitic movement or protest, but because of the way it's being put together and because of the people involved, which is basically the liberal left, it is going to carry some anti-Israel sentiment and some anti-Zionism and some anti-Semitism by virtue of who the people making the majority of that movement, for lack of a better word, are.
The what? Well, that's, you know, in the article I wrote today, and I'll send you guys a copy. I'm sorry that I did not copy you on that. I started by explaining what we talked about in the class about the greedy Jew coming back, you know, going back to the Middle Ages and the Crusades. I started by saying that and said this is still being used today, and so it's what it is. But you know, the liberal left is painting this picture of Israel. What's amazing to me. Of Israel being the new Nazis of the Middle East, and then they're in the way of world peace. Don't believe for a minute that if Israel was to give away all the land, world peace would be attained. It's crazy. The only thing that would happen is all the Jews would die. Okay. So, but the liberal left is selling. What's amazing to me is that those lies are being propagated over and over and over on the media and. The media is propagating those lies, and at the same time, the Jews are accused of owning the media. It's like, you know, oh, the Jews are in control of the media. If we were in control of the media, let me tell you, we would paint a different picture of Israel. It doesn't make any sense. This is ridiculous. But the world is buying it. So why is the world buying it if there is not satanic influence in there? Why would the whole world buy it and go like, yeah, sounds good. It's the Jews. It's satanic influence. There's no reason why the world has been buying this hatred of Jewish people for so long, and it continues, and it's going to get even worse. It is a satanic influence. It's a blinding as well, yeah. But it's all a satanic influence. Now, the next thing is the last few pages here are the radical Islam. When I say what, second, it is never this? What, where? But in, where is that? Okay, so it is never wise to associate, well, I just told you that. But in the case of Israel, liberals first claim that Israel is responsible for the events of the Middle East and then carry the false blame over unto Jewish people in general and globally. Unfortunately, it offers a breeding ground for yet the most dangerous enemy of Israel, not to mention the enemy of the civilized world, radical Islam, which is the next thing. Yes, I mean, I've told you that before, so I feel a little guilty rereading the same parts that I've told you before. But you get to take the notes home anyway. So radical Islam. Well, radical Islam. I hate to tell you, but since we started the class, when was it? In March. It hasn't. Better, and it's not going to get any better. The mosque, Ground Zero Mosque, exists. You know that it's open. It's been open. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's guess what? It's open, and don't hear anything on the news. It's there. It's part of, you know. I mean, there was an article in Newsweek in. I have a copy of it at home. I believe it's March of 09, and it's a green cover, and on the cover it says radical Islam is here to stay. Get used to it. On the cover of Newsweek. And the article was an amazing article trying to water down what radical Islam is all about and trying to get us to kind of maybe be more tolerant. And it was very scary. So, but when we talk about Islam, and we're on page 8 now, when we talk about Islam, we must be careful. We must not be careful because we're scared, okay? It's too many people that are scared about talking about Islam. We're not careful because we're not being careful because we're scared of what Muslims can do to us. We're careful because we don't want to generalize, okay? So we must be careful not to fall into the temptation of pointing the finger and categorizing all Muslims as Jew haters. A few are not. Well, you cannot be a Muslim and be a believer as a Christian. Anybody who says I'm a... No. Mm-mm. You can say I'm an Arab and I'm an Arab believer. Muslim is a religion, okay? A Muslim a pledge is allegiance, his or her allegiance to Allah. Allah is God, but God is not Allah is not Yahweh. It's different, okay? And the Prophet Muhammad supersedes whatever Jesus said. The Quran is better than the Bible. So a Muslim saying, I'm a Muslim who believe in Jesus, say no, stop. If you're a Muslim, you don't believe in Jesus. If you believe in Jesus, call yourself a follower, a disciple, a Christian. But if you don't like the word Christian, I don't care. Call yourself a follower, a disciple of Jesus of Nazareth, who you believe that he died for your sins, he rose again, you're a Christian. Don't call yourself a Muslim. An Arab, yes. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Arab and Jews are... Jewish is different. You can be Jewish by religion, Jewish by faith, Jewish by blood, and it could mean all of the above. Arabs can be Arab Christians, Arab atheists, or Arab Muslims. Yeah. Right. Okay, so this being said, we must realize that anti-Semitism has been indoctrinated in the Muslim psyche as part of the regular upbringing of most Muslims worldwide. It's part of the curriculum, okay? It's part of the... You're raised as a Muslim, you're raised being told that Israel is the enemy, Israel is the little Satan, Israel needs to be destroyed, Jews need to be destroyed, and then some Muslims will become more moderate, more... not conservative, more moderate, more, what's another word for it? Open-minded, and when they go into society and integrate into society, what's the word I'm looking for? And you know what the Jewish people, I'm looking for, when the Jewish people were accepted in society, they assimilated. Okay, so there you go. Sometimes I miss my words here. So some Muslims will be more assimilated, will be more moderate, but my belief, when I talk to Muslims and when I read what is being written by them, when I see the myriad of videos of the hatred that they're teaching from all over the world, my belief is that a true Quran-following Muslim cannot be a moderate Muslim. So any moderate Muslim today telling you, I'm moderate, I'm everybody, I love everybody, and I met one of these at UCI 2 weeks ago, and I we were doing evangelism, and I ended up talking to him for 40 minutes. I gave him a tract. 10 minutes later, he comes back, and he said, thanks for job well done. I don't need it. I'm a Muslim, but thank you for what you're doing. And I'm looking at him. It's about Jesus. And I go like, really? Talk to me. I'm interested. He goes, well, what you're doing is great. I said, well, if it's great, why don't you want it? He said, well, because I'm a Muslim, but it's good for the Christians. And then I just threw a monkey wrench at him. I said, well, I'm Jewish. but I'm a Christian. And it took him a few seconds to react. And we talked for 3 minutes, and it turned out that he was a universalist. And, you know, everybody, anything, God loves even the atheists. So it's okay for everybody. And he was very, but by his standards, he said he went to a mosque, and the imam of the mosque, and it was probably a very liberal, what I don't even know what they call themselves, but it was not. It's like the Orthodox Jews don't consider the liberal or agnostic Jews even Jews. They say like, well, you don't keep kosher, you don't keep the Sabbath, you don't do this, you're not even Jewish in our eyes. So it's the same way. I think a Muslim cannot be a true Muslim if they don't follow the Quran. And I told this guy, I said, now in the Quran, you know, there are verses that said that you can lie to the infidels to fulfill Allah's agenda or Muhammad's agenda. You're aware of that because you tell me you read the Quran. He goes, yes, yes, I know what you're talking about. But there are also verses that talk about that you shouldn't lie. I just don't remember where they are, but I know they're there. I said, good. So now you've got contradiction. One verse says you can lie. Another verse says you can't lie. Which is it? Can't be both. He said he wasn't going to get back to me on that. Hold on, you guys. I'm sorry.
You know, that falls into the category of Christian ethics. But you can't compare lying to save a life and lying to convert somebody to a false religion or to kill somebody. Or, you know, you're talking about lying to save a life here. And it requires a little more than just this response. I mean, Christian ethics, you know, like, is it okay to lie when you're saving a life? Well, I mean, are there examples of that in the Bible? No, but he passes by every Friday. What about the what's her name in the spies and the thread on the window, Rahab? What did she do? So, you know, so we don't have time to get into it, but that's kind of like a parallel there, a little bit of a parallel. Okay, so, but. Of course. What we say and what we are is, you know, is two different things. But going back to the worst enemy of Israel, I have pounded you in this class with this, that not only the worst enemy of Israel, but the worst enemy of the Western world, the worst enemy of Western civilization is radical Islam. And I'm telling you, I've told you and I'll tell you again, all the moderate Muslims that call them self-proclaimed moderate Muslims or secular Muslims or modern Western Muslims, whatever they want to call themselves, all these people, when the radical Muslims or the Islamists take over in whatever country and they give an ultimatum to moderate Muslims, it's either them, the infidels, being whatever country they're in, with the Jews and the Christians or the infidels, or us, the real Muslim. Pick a side. There's no three possibility. You're either a Muslim and you come on our side, or you're not really a Muslim, and then whatever you are, you end up on their side. What do you think they're going to do? The moderate Muslims are going to go, hey, we're Muslims, okay? They're going to go with the rest of those guys, hoping that this is going to be, you know, hoping that maybe if you put a lot of hot water, like the radical Islam and some really cool water, moderate Muslim, maybe if you go in there, it's going to cool down the water a little bit. But it's not. They're going to end up being controlled by the radical Islam. And then at the end of the day, all Muslims will be controlled by a small group. There's only about, in the numbers, only 10%, only 10% of all Muslims are radicals. So that's not much. Well, that's only about 150 million. You know, 10%. Right. Exactly. So, and then the, of course, the, so you know, the, we've talked enough about the, you know, the implementation of Sharia. I don't need to pound this anymore. You know what's going on in this world. You know what's going on in America. Forcing of Sharia law unto us, and you know, in some areas when it's really obvious and not comfortable, people are making some noise. In some other areas, we don't even know it's happening. I mean, I stumbled upon the Sharia banking when I showed you that one day. Remember that? I forgot the name of it. It's in my notes where they were doing the different interest rate or no interest rate because Muslims could not loan money with interest, and so we have banks now that line themselves up with Islamic banking. There's one in Irvine. I was like, wow. So we don't know. A lot of what's happening happens behind closed doors. We don't know, but we know what we believe, and we know that we can fight for the truth. And we still live in a country where freedom is you know, we're still free. But I don't know. Things are evolving here. But I tell you one thing. I don't care I don't care what kind of ministry you're in. I don't care if you're in Jewish ministry or in of any kind of ministry. As a believer, if you don't know and if you don't care to share your faith with Muslims, we're not going to make a difference. It doesn't matter what kind. I mean, I'm in Jewish ministry. I teach people how to share the gospel with Jewish people. I speak with Jewish people. But if you're not willing to share your faith with Muslims and know a little bit about how to share your faith with Muslims, the battle is going to be lost because they are bold and they're moving fast. And the only way you can change a Muslim's heart to love the West and to love Israel is only if his heart is taken by the Lord and he's changed into the new man. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. So, you know, that's something that I've been aware of for a while. If we don't work at leading Muslims to Jesus, the battle is going to be a lot harder for us. And once Sharia law is more and more established around the world in America, and it's not going to come to America right away, but we're watching some sort of a dry run or a dress rehearsal. Europe is just a precursor of what's going to come to America, and I'm not even sure all Europeans know that they're actually stuck. It's too late for them. It's too late for change. You cannot change the numbers, the number game in Europe. I think I've told you about the demographics, the way it works in Europe. You know, the Muslims have been coming for the last 50 years. They have 4, 5, 6 kids. It's in your notes for tonight anyway. 4, 5, 6 kids. And the European natives have 1 or 1.5 or 2 kids. Not enough to maintain a civilization. So the natives are reducing to the point of no return. And the Muslims are taken over by virtue of simply new birth. In 20, 30 years, it's too late. It's actually too late now. Unless we kick all, and it's going to sound very white supremacist, terrible, but unless you kick all the Muslims out of those countries to send them back from where they came from, and you say, okay, only natives can stay, and it sounds like a very racist agenda. We can't really do that. But it's kind of like a catch-22. So what? You start making babies. That's another solution, right? Right. So the Muslim agenda is definitely a I mean, they have one goal, is to bring the caliphate over the whole planet. The caliphate, you know, the caliph is the leader of the caliphate, and it's the head honcho of Islam. And Islam is not just a religion. We need to remember that. It's an ideology. It includes every aspect of life. Banking, politics, education, religion, food. It's an ideology. It's really a way of life. So that's why, you know, I think that some people that are you know, preaching multiculturalism and tolerance for Islam are also maybe mistaken, although I can't think that we would be the only smart people in this room with a few other people that agree with us. But they're thinking that maybe they're being tolerant to Muslims because we have to be tolerant to other religions, but they don't realize that Islam is much more than just a religion. Caliphate, C-A-L-I-P-H-A-T-E, caliphate. A caliph is it's like a king or an emperor. A caliphate is like a kingdom, but it's from a Muslim perspective. And there used to be caliphs in Islam until the 1600s, maybe 1700s. I don't know. I don't have that. Oh, they're realizing I didn't hear that speech, but that wouldn't surprise me. That wouldn't surprise me. They're the most radical in of all the European countries. The most radical Muslims are in England. The largest number of Muslims is in France, but the most radical ones are in England. I mean, they're walking the streets of London screaming that Islam will take over, we're going to take over, we're going to kick you out. It's just amazing. And you have the British police, you know, the bobbies or whatever you call them, they're just watching and they're like making sure there's no violence and it's like freedom of speech. And, you know, in the meantime, Islam will take over and we'll get rid of the Jews and we'll get rid of all the... And they're doing it. They're doing it, and we're watching in unbelief or in disarray or whatever. We're just watching. Sorry? Well, I know that God, you know, I don't believe for a second that God is not in control. Okay? God is always in control. And I'm also looking at England and France. And England and France were two countries that were really not nice to the Jews. Jews got kicked out of England until they came back under Oliver Cromwell. And then the Jews of France, I mean, France is one of the very few countries during the World War, the Second World War, that actually had a government, the Vichy government, that went to Hitler and then say, hey, you know, we'll work with you, we'll get the Jews out. And they did many things to get the Jews out, more than many other countries. Some French people also ended up hiding Jews, yes, absolutely. But the French were really nasty, not just during the war. But you remember through the class, every time I would tell you about something new happens to the Jews, guess what? Here's a French guy who did it. Here's a French pope or a French king or French this and French that. It, you know, made me feel really special about coming from France, you know. So, you know, I'm thinking the French and the Brits have done really a number on the Jews for centuries. And Genesis 12:3, I will bless those who bless you, I will curse him who curses you. God is possibly getting back at France and England for really messing big time with Israel. That's a possibility. And we have been, up to now, rather friendly with Israel, and we have been protected somehow. But things are changing. Things are changing. So, anyway, so those are the three groups that I wanted to talk to you about the new anti-Semitism. It's nothing new to you. I've told you about it before. You can read the notes. There's about 12 pages of notes. There's a lot more details in the notes about that. What I want to do is, we're done with that ends lesson number 19.